Blog Talk Radio.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
Good morning, and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. I just got off the phone earlier. We were speaking about blood cancer. Every 180 seconds, someone is diagnosed with blood cancer, and African Americans are more susceptible than other ethnicities to getting blood cancer. And our guest that we had, he was actually a survivor, and he's dealing with it, and he was talking about the struggle he had in trying to get diagnosed. It took him a couple years. So if you're out there and you're dealing with different symptoms, please don't hesitate to get a second opinion, go to a different doctor, a different institution, if you possibly can, and also reach out to the LLS organization. Their website is lls.org, and they can help you connect you with a doctor, connect you with a great community, connect you with financial support. Again, you can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keyes. Check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keyes. Well, now I'm going to be speaking with, this woman is amazing. You have to read her book. It's called The Last Nomad. She shares such an intimate view of her culture, of her personal story and journey, of coming from Somalia to America, and all the things that happened in between to her. Her name is Shugri Saeed Sal. I think she's on the line right now. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, good morning. So nice to hear your lovely, beautiful voice. Thank you for having me.
You know, I feel like I've had your voice in my head for the last week or so, reading your book, and I was like, I want to be her friend. Like, she is like, she got a little spunk in her. She got some fire going on in there.
Duh, you got some fire going on. I was looking at your beautiful, and I love your lovely afro. We have the same texture of hair, I believe.
Yes.
You live in Petaluma, right?
I live in Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. For some reason, you felt so close. I don't know why.
Yeah, no. I live in Philadelphia, but you're on the West Coast, and I appreciate you waking up to do this call.
Oh, no worries. Some nights I have insomnia. Yesterday I had a long day of infusion. You know, I'm a nurse, so I was infused in somebody, and I had an interview earlier than that. But, you know, it always works out. Everybody who's, you know, I was just listening to you a little bit about the end of that, what you were saying about blood cancer. So it's, you know, we have all kind of people to connect you with. And thank you for the amazing work you're doing, Joy.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you are definitely going to inspire a new generation of people. You know, one of the things, this is a funny little story. I was dating a guy that was from Kenya. I was dating a guy from Kenya, and he was talking to me about how he didn't have to use a clock to wake up. And I was like, I have to have a clock. What is he talking about? And he would never use a clock, and he was able to wake up. The reason I say this, because you, who grew up part of your life in the desert as a nomad, how did you wake up in the morning?
Oh, my God. You know, this. He is so right. This waking up with the clock, by the way, you just made me aware, is actually a Western thing, I think, right? In Africa, you just, there's a natural rhythm you get up with. You know, we don't have too many lights in our houses, right? So in the desert, you know, you wake up the bleeding of your animals, right? In the city, it was the rooster. Or, you know, some people wake up, you know, they know the morning prayers. So, you know, your body get into a rhythm, I noticed. And even now, honestly, if I'm not tired, my body knows when to get up, you know. Like this morning, I was kind of afraid because I actually set up two alarms because, I was having a little bit of insomnia, which can happen to people, and it's a good actually thing to mention. But, you know, you are absolutely right. I've never used a clock to wake up until I arrived and Western culture, and much later.
So it's true. It is true.
It is.
You know,
he wasn't trying to impress you. He was he could be. He liked you.
Yeah,
well, he was like, girl, I'm waking up for you.
He did like me. He did like me. He did impress me. Yeah, yada, yada, yada. I can't tell you
the rest of the story. He was like, I could provide, girl. I don't even need to use the clock, girl.
Well, you have an interesting story, and I was talking about the fire that you have, because in your story, you talk about the different challenges, but there's a lot of beauty, and some of the beauty is in the nomadic life. Can you tell the audience, like, what your typical day would be like if you were out with your grandmother that you talk about many times, your Ayeyo, is that how you say it?
Ayeyo, yeah. You know, let me just give a quick, do you want me to give just a quick overview of the book, or you just want me to talk about
it? Yes, you can do that, and also you're going to read some of it also, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that probably would give the quick, but just, you know, I want people to imagine, you know, a desert people who are nomads, who are in a, you know, they live in huts that are portable, everything they own must fit in a camel, you know, and they every so often they take off for a new grazing land and a water source, you know. So there's a ceaseless end for looking for water and grazing land. And, you know, so in this people we live with lions and hyenas and fox and all of those wild dogs, you know. It's really the survival of the fittest. But as a child, really what I remember is soaking the oral tradition of my people, you know. Everything we knew was handed down to me from generation to generation by this amazing elders, you know. And I have scenes in my head, you know, of sitting by the fire as the fire crackles between me and my, you know, my grandmother or my uncles. You know, I remember some of them had, one uncle had like scars on his face, you know, and I remember even him leaning into the fire and the orange hue on his face as he described the day he wrestled with a lion. And obviously he was sitting across from me to tell, you know, you become brave because they were brave. These were the people of poets, you know. We learn like stories of how to, what our environment was from our people because they knew, you know, don't go travel that way. There is lions lay there, or don't go that way, or maybe, you know, wars that had happened in the past, you know, clans, you know, you just, everything you needed was imputed to you as you sat by that fire. You know, it was really beautiful. They were singing when we were, you know, condensing milk. I remember as a child, you know, sitting by my grandmother in a rainy season. Our animals are not far from us because it is the rainy season, so the grass, you don't need to herd them farther from our area, right? And as we excessive milk, we will turn them into yogurt. And one of the songs I remember as a child, if my morning voice will let me, we used to say, and it's singing for the hand is where the vessel was using to condense the milk to turn into yogurt. And I remember hearing the squishing of the milk as the birds, you know, chirp in the distance, the crickets. It's just, and our animal is just grazing so peacefully and contently. These are the images that still plaster in my young adult mind still. And just the fast open land of the nomads. You know, I used to climb hormone miles. Obviously, even I used to be chased by warhawks and all that. It was a beautiful time to be a child, you know, despite it's
I
all,
remember,
you know.
Sugary, I remember the story you were telling in the book about when you got your what was it, goat? A goat was giving birth, and then you brought the goat to your Ayeyo, and you were like, look what I got. And she was like, okay, that's yours. and then all the ones after that, are yours, you know? I thought that was such the wonder that you had as a child. And when you're in the city, you know, we don't see the greenery and the smell the air and the earth. What we smell is smog and trash, and it's just a different way of growing up, you know, no matter where you are, whether in Africa or America or South America or Asia, there's the country and then there's the city, and it's just a different, you know, way. Now, your dad, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jake, go ahead.
I was going to say, so you were there with your Ayeyo, but you did live with your dad part of your life, and you talk about the struggles, but you talk about how thoughtful, I would say, your father was with education. Can you talk to the audience about how your father differed than the regular community in educating, you know, young women?
Yeah, thank you so much, Joy. That is a beautiful question. You know, my father held a different view of the man of that time, right? This is a misogynistic culture. And that time, you know, if you want to educate somebody and put the investment, whatever money you had, it was always, let's give our son, as it was a guarantee the boys will produce something. However, my father said, you know, if you educate a daughter, you educate a village. He knew that. And if you educate a son, you educate himself only. And he really held that view and used it. And because of it, because of what my father investment he had on us, today we are better for it. All my sisters get education. We are a woman who are very aware of their rights, you know. He never, even when I told my father, believe it or not, Joy, that I was marrying a man of different culture, he didn't, you know, other man would have said, what clan is he? Who is he? Who is? My father was like, as long as he is practicing Islam, you know, I'm okay with him. You know, he didn't ask me what race he was. For him, religion was important, you know. And it's just, you know, he was a complex man. And one should never, Joy, write a book to get revenge on anybody. To me, I want to show the complexity of the mother who, of the man who fathered me. Because to be honest, when I think of my father, despite sometimes not agreeing with his corporal punishment, nothing but kindness comes to my heart. Because, you know, he was a man of his era, and truly, truly, he tried his best.
Yeah, you try to balance in the story, and I agree. I think you did a good job. Your father, when I was reading about him, I didn't like him. I will tell you, I did not like him. But then a little story would come out, such as him making sure you got education. He actually didn't even want you to go live in the desert with your grandmother. He wanted all his kids, you know, in the city with him. And he tried to, later in the book, I don't want to give everything away, but he helped save a group of your family on the bus. I don't want to tell the whole story, but let's just say that.
We were his children.
You know? Yes, you know.
So he
was very powerful.
He was really powerful, and I really appreciate a lot of things, Joy, even later. He didn't really push the clan mindset, which is really responsible, the division of many people. In fact, nobody bothered my father later on because he wasn't. First of all, he come from the two clans that were genociding each other. He was one clan on his father's side and another clan on his mother's side. And they really were at each other's throat trying to kill each other. But because my father really educated men from both clans, they didn't really kill him. You know, even one time he didn't make it to the story. They arrested him, and he said, "Hey, I'm a man of God. I'm just, you know, passing by here. I don't believe in this thing." And they kept him for 10 days and let him go. He was just a scholar. He was really a brilliant man, you know. And, you know, you have to really, obviously, you know, he was a linguist. My father was a teacher of English and Arabic, and, you know, I just have to look at it and have compassion. I noticed, Joy, you know, people who have the hardest time with him and couldn't forgive him really struggle a lot, really. And I think forgiveness is for you, not for anybody else. At the end of the day, you are setting yourself
yes.
free.
Now, you mentioned several times about clans, and in the story, mm-hmm. it is like currency. It is so, so important about knowing your clan. Can you talk about that and how you were educated in knowing your clans from your mother and your father's side?
Yeah, you know, Somalia is a clan system, and you are your father's clan. It's a patrilineal. I can never say that word, so don't get me saying Oh my God. I'm going to say something that I'm not hearing. Girl, we're not going there today. But anyways,
okay.
You are your father. I was going to say something else because I'm a nurse, so my mouth is going to go other earth. And anyways, so paternal, I think, paternal. But anyways, you are your father's clan. And so from early on, children memorize such a long lineage of their clan system from early on. You see a young girl reciting her clan so proudly from like 30 generations down, you know. And they, you know, little girls are they speak so wisely, you know, with their noses flaring, you know, I'm like, and their hand on their hip, you know, like, I'm this, and I belong to this, and, you know, and it was so fascinating, you know, to how we learn, you know, this. But, you know, when the war happened, you were taught your father's clan, your grandmother's clan, your mom's clan, because in case another clan catches you who don't share a father clan with you, you need to talk your way out by speaking a little bit of that person's clan. I know one time my sister, when she went back to Mogadishu to save her dying daughter, where the bullets were happening, she literally went back. Talk about mothers, right? Mothers are such a fierce warrior. And she head back to the war area we just ran away from because her daughter was dying of diarrhea. And she, you know, a man said to her, you know, what clan are you? And she just gave him the clan that he was. And he was like, did they tell you we rape women, pregnant women? Like, he was indignant, you know. But I don't know if he believed her fully. But nevertheless, he was not sure enough to you know, do whatever. And, you know, women were being probably raped or other things were happening. We are collateral damage. But, yeah, you really need to know. And, you know, clans can be used in a positive thing. I know the other day on Facebook, I saw a woman, Joy, who they were saying she was wandering around, and I guess she was having some mental health, and this man married her. Obviously, after she had kids for him, she ended up having some maybe postpartum psychosis. Whatever the case was, this man was mentioning this woman's clan and saying she's not feeling well. This is her full name. This is her subclan. And I recognize the subclan to be my grandmother's subclan and my mother's clan. And which I mentioned in the book, you know what I mean? I quickly tagged my sisters. I said, let's help her share with the relatives. Maybe someone knows her. And I was actually going to go back and see if I can send her some money or if they had resolved. So there's a positiveness to it, but it's also you can use it to hurt people too. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the war that was going on, you know, in Somalia. Like you said, people were hurting each other because they were from, you know, different clans and things like that. But, you know, it's a positive. Your sister, you have a lot of powerful women in your life. You had your grandmother, your sister, Abshira. She was like superwoman. I mean, I was like, where is she going? She's going back where? Oh, my God. I was like praying for her, reading the book, you know. Your mom, she used to throw stones at your dad. I mean, Yeah. You had a lot of strong women examples, but unfortunately, we do have to bring up this issue of the state of women in Somalia. Yesterday and today, it was not good. And this issue of FGM, you know, you talk about female genital mutilation that happened to, I guess, 90% of the women in Somalia. And if you didn't have it, you were bad. Talk to me. You were telling one story about when a woman got divorced, she got sewn up again. Talk to us about that and the importance. Why was that so important?
You know, it was so interesting to me, Joy, for me to hear. So let me say, Somali women are the most resilient women, you know, gritness. Their fabric of their being is just, this woman are a hardcore, you know. I mean, when these rappers talk about, are you a hardcore? I'm thinking, these women are really hardcore. And Somali women, unlike Arab women, is actually divorced their man if they didn't like it and remarried over and over. So they're not the kind of women, despite the discrimination, they don't put up with shit. They fight. Like the African-American woman, they are fierce women. But having to say that, there are something that entrench in the cultures, and that is where their demise comes from, right? And they become the ones who carry out this tradition. And one must understand, Joy, when I wrote this book, I want people to just get it inside to this world, right? So what I really lay out for you was, what are the thinking that get these people going? So in the desert, when the clans were at war, to form allegiance, they have to give each other a virgin daughters. Those daughters better be not only virgin, but sealed in the night of their consummation, you call it. And so if they are not, they give back and say, you insulted us, and you bring shame not only to you, but to the man of your family. You know, so what it is, this woman, I remember, I think even within the FGM, I see some women. This is a story, actually, a woman who, when I was visiting my sister, Sophia, who's paralyzed in Switzerland, we were having conversation. I was having a conversation with my sister's friend, and she's the one who brought this woman from the north who want to, when she divorced her husband, close herself up, the idea of making herself look like virgin. Now, that is really a drastic case of a woman who gone a little too far, you know? But but do you see, like, she wants to give the man, I am still, what the man are tricked by this stupid thing that if she's sealed, she, almost like she's virgin, right? But if you remember, when they circumcise women, they only not cut the clitoris. And I'm sorry we have to say this on TV, but I'm a nurse, so sometimes the clitoris helps. And it's an anatomy of a body. And they will saw it back and leave a little hole for peace to come out. And you remember one of the things that really to this day I struggle was to me is, even if I hear the sound of my feet, I still feel shame, because that was not something, if you are sealed the proper way, no one should be able to hear you being. And it is such an ingrained thing that I have to, even this liberal progressive woman, still have to overcome. But it was just so strange even for me to hear that woman's story. That is not the that norm. You know, we are a culture who practice that. And I really wanted to write a book is that, there's a lot of stories in the Somali woman, a book that really talk about, now that we are not circumcising some of our Western daughters, what are the Somali women using, or men using, as a weapon to control their daughters, you know? I'm not agreeing with them, but I'm thinking that venue is not open for you. It's a sick world, and we must leave behind. And that's the reason, Joy, that I literally show you everything, me being circumcised, me being curious about sex, me getting married, and unshackling myself from that, and freeing my daughter.
You share so much of yourself, and I just want to say thank you, because that's a brave thing to do, especially coming from the society that you did come from, where people, and women in particular, do not share certain stories with anybody, because then the shame will come to them or their families. But let's talk about some funny things that happened.
You had to
tame a camel. You had to take a camel with the water from in the middle of the night. Talk about this camel and how the camel wouldn't move.
Oh my God! You know, I think that is one of my absolutely favorite story. You know, and I'm glad I told that story. You know, This is a story happened when the Somali war is happening, and we are with our father, and we are in his city, Galkayo, and all of a sudden the city, everybody abandoned us. The city went into war. Two clans went into war, and my father realized, here you have in your hand this young girl, they're gonna get raped. So he took us to his brother's nomadic world, and I find myself as a teenager and nomad again this time. And so this day, I remember we were heading to the well. You know, as you know, we are in ceaseless end for water. So we took Dan. Dan is an act of fetching water from the well using camel. So this camel were carrying huge tanks of water to the well, and it was an empty one. And as we travel, I remember my uncle and I was with my cousin, and they were talking about how this camel had been bitten by a by a hyena, and he is really a wild one. If you know, I'm like, okay, I mean, you can tell me this story, but really I can listen, and I'm curious, and I'm one who's brought in them, asking them all this question: who lives this place? Oh, that's the place of the lion. Who lives? That's where the hyenas lay. Oh, you know, all of this. I'm just curious about land. I'm always like that. If I meet a person, I ask millions of questions. Humans fascinated me, life fascinated me. But I'm not thinking that I'm going to end up leading this camel back home in the thick of the night.
They set you up.
They set me up real good, Joy. So I was like, we get to the well, and as you see, we're taking us, washing ourselves out in front of everybody. And my sibling are with me, my brother, Gulag, rest his soul, who's younger than me, and my sister, Arafa, who is older than me. And, you know, we get the water, and all of a sudden, my uncle say, who's taking the camel back to home? And I'm thinking, you know, that surely he's not talking to us, you know. And I remember my, you know, I'm thinking, you know, maybe my cousin who knew the land will come with us. This is really a deadly risk I'm taking. But when he said, my sister and brother literally, Joy, separate from me as far as they could, you know. And so I'm looking like, and then my uncle is, I need, you know, he's using his blessing, who needs a blessing. I'm like, okay, that blessing. And so I said, okay, I will. I volunteer. And, oh, Joy, that was the craziest.
Oh,
I remember
God.
Leading that camel back and knowing I'm heading where the lion is and hyena is still are filled with. And I also know that the night is going to fall because, as you remember, my uncle said, when I asked him, well, where is home? And he said, head this direction, and you will see a fire lit in the distance, and you follow. Meaning they know the night is going to swallow me, you know. No one is thinking that this 15-year-old girl or 16-year-old is going to be eaten by a lion. You know, I'm not of this land. It's been a while since I was in the desert. But I was always like that. I put on this brave front, and I look at this camel, I go, you know, I start singing to him, and he's looking at me with his long eyelashes, like with his big black eyes. I know, I hope you know what you're doing, girl. And I kept at it, Joy. I just leading him. And obviously the night was upon me, and he heard the sounds of the hyenas, and he was ready to bolt and destroy everything. And you can see me thinking, calculating myself, should I go on top of the camel and we run wild together? Should I leave? What should I do? And I'm saying, if I go run on top of him and then he breaks, you know, if I fall from him and I break, all of the animals will come out of the woodwork when they smell my blood. You know, these animals have strong sense. And in the end, you know, he did the impossible. My uncle had told me that if he sits down, he will destroy the han, which is the water-carrying vessel. He will destroy everything. Hello?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? You went out a little bit. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, if he sat down, he was going to break the water. he was going to break the water as he sat down onto the container. Yeah.
Yeah, he was going to destroy everything, Joy. There was no question, and I have to prevent from that. You know, so I am, like, determined to do that. For whatever reason, I'm like, I don't want this to come. It, you know I'm going to die, but I don't want him to destroy that, you know. So in the end, I see he sat down, and he was leaning from side to side. That is to get rid of all of this thing he's carrying, and I'm like, hell no, you know, and I'm desperate trying to think what to do, and you know what, I took a stick and I put it in his ear, and he goes and he's almost wanted to bolt out, and I'm like, two big sticks, and I raised it on his ear, and he bolted out, and I'm like, let's go, Jesus. And
in the middle of the night, this woman in the middle of the night is in the desert alone, not a woman,
with
that is like unheard of.
Hyenas
coming after her. She gets the camel and sticks something in his ear to get him to stand up. Nobody could do this. I don't think they thought you were going to make it to the next village. I really think they thought she's not going to make it.
I am telling you, my uncle, he started laughing in between me telling the story. I still have this beautiful image of him really laughing with his whole body, you know. It's just, you did what to him? I go, yes, when he wouldn't get up, I put sticks in his ear. And somehow that agitated him. I don't know how I come up with that, Joy. But I have to, like, there was lions and hyenas waiting to eat both of us. And I'm like, we need to get out of here. And you are not.
You
got to
get out of there.
Destroying.
Oh, my God. You know, there's another funny story. This woman is a trickster. She's a funny trickster. You were playing tricks. On a particular, well, she was a bad girl at an orphanage you were in. You want to talk about the trick you played on, what was her name? Oh, God. She was hitting everybody
Shabbat?
On a certain Thursday and Friday.
Was that Shabbat? You're talking about the one I had to put the, Shabbat story. Shabbat was a well-known bully in the orphanage where I lived, and when I come up, you know, she used to hit us every, like, I think Friday, but
every
Thursday
week.
She would
unannounce. You said every Thursday, Friday, she was hitting you. I was like, what the
but she would announce ahead. She would announce ahead a hitting day, and I remember my stomach just turning into nuts, right? But what really bothered me was my younger sister and how she screamed. And so I was like, I'm going to overthrow this woman. She ran with such an iron fist. But I was like, she's going to come down. So I remember we started taking diving class outside of the boarding school, and, you know, but with a bunch of girls. And I'm like, girls, we got to overthrow them. And I remember rallying them. I'm like, what are we going to do to incite a riot, you know? And, you know, in the end, what I could think of is, let's put a shit in her bed, in her mattress. And I thought, poop in a can. So I put it, I asked a young girl to poop in it, and I dumped it, that poop on her mattress, and I took her shoes, and it, like, all of it, like, just laid all around it, you know, spread it all around, and she was,
I'm
done, you know. Obviously, you know, she made the mistake of that day, and instead of torturing us one by one, she called the main security guard, and she, you know, I mean, I get in trouble, but really, I ended her reign, and I said, you know what, she's going to kill me, so for the rest of my time in that boarding school, a woman has to sleep with us every night, a woman who was a military woman, to keep us all safe, because I'm like, she's going to kill us. So I used to plan for my life. I said, listen, I commit the sin of the century. Shabbat is going to come for me. For me, I wanted to sleep at night peacefully. And I mean, I care about my sleep. And I'm like, I didn't want to, like, be protect every night awake trying to say Shabbat is going to come down punching me. But I did a lot of, you know, things like, you know,
you know what,
Joy?
Yes, go ahead.
I said, this was the survival of the fittest. You know, I was already, every time someone, you know, you get into fights. I even get into a fight with a deaf guy because, you know, you don't know who wants to beat you up. And, you know, and you just have to really survive. And we form deep friendships, and but you have to kind of point it out who is a friend and a foe, you know.
Now, you're going to read some of your story? Can you read some? Because we're running out of time a little bit, but I want you to read some.
I can read a little bit from the prologue. Is that okay? Or the first chapter? Which one do you want me to read?
Prologue. No, you can read the prologue. The prologue is fine.
Prologue. I am the last nomad. How can I be the last one? Nomads still exist in that faraway desert where I grew up. So how can I make such a bold statement? What I'm really trying to say is I am the last person in my direct line to have one sleep like that. And now I feel like the soul keeper of my family story. As I sit here in my home in California, weaving my tale for you, the weight of that responsibility urges me on. All my ancestors on both sides of my family were nomads. They traveled the East African desert in search of grazing land for their livestock and the most precious resource of all, water. When they exhausted the land and the clouds disappeared from the horizon, their accumulated ancestral knowledge told them where to move next to find greener pastures. They loaded their hats and belongings into the most obedient camels and herded their livestock to a new home. My nomadic family was at the mercy of the weather. At the end of July, the long dry season, when the clouds finally rumble with rain, we look up the sky with a new home. As the desert quenched its thirst, the red earth crackled back to life. Responsibilities ease, and adults welcome the rain with drums, singing, and dancing. Children get fat and health sitting around the fire. At night, they soak in the folk tales and poems passed down generation, danced down from generation to generation. But despite the renewed abundance of food, we knew we had to preserve some of the dry season to follow. Sometimes drought hit harder than usual, killing both livestock and people. Bones and twigs litter the terrain where goats and sheep once happily grazed. In those times, my ancestors ceased singing under the moon, their drums harder, and they longed for good news. Children no longer heard stories by the fire, and an old poet will bellow to the desert, poison his agony. I will speak of a dying, and speak of a, he would speak of a dying land, taking his precious camel. His mournful poem will travel through time and across borders to remedy the pain of his people. For years, Fornia know nothing of the nomadic life except for the stories I have shared. As I sit here now in my comfortable suburban home, listening to my teenager son excitedly tell me about his favorite YouTuber, I'm reminded acutely of the void between my past and present. I speak of a world which he has little understanding. An old African proverb, says, when an elder dies, a library is burned. I'm not yet an elder, but I do feel like a portal between two worlds. I am the last person in my immediate family who holds this particular library of knowledge. As years pass, the sense of urgency I feel about sharing my experience with my children and the world grows. In my imagination, I have shared my story with each of you many times as we gather under a clear black sky, its shining stars guiding my ancestral wisdom. I have imagined you leaning into me as if I had brought the news of water after a drought. I have poured us more tea, for I knew it was going to be a long night under the luminous moon. I want to get this tale of mine right. The fire between us has crackled with excitement, as if to nudge my story along. But now it's no longer enough for me to just imagine telling you my story. I feel the need to bring you all by the fire and into my world.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Well, I want to thank you for sharing so much of your story with us. I'm going to be giving away some copies of your book to the listeners.
Oh.
So I thank you again. It's such a beautiful story.
Thank you, Joy. You know, I wanted to say, you know, I honestly wanted to tell all African Americans to visit Africa. I want to personally go to Senegal. You know, I went to Ethiopia, but I really want to go to Senegal. There is so much beauty that exists in Africa. And we are not the stories that sometimes Western spin is starting people who are compassless. In fact, the true compass exists in Africa. And Africa has a way of grounding you. And if you want to feel birth again and feel your ancestral again, go home. And reading this book will certainly connect you to that root and way of life of your people. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it has the both views. You have the city view, you have the nomadic life. And I think that's important for young people to see that there's not just one Africa, you know. There are many parts of Africa, many places to Africa. And, you know, right now with the COVID, it's such a crazy time for people to try to travel. Some people are, some people are afraid to, but hopefully we'll be able to in the future, you know, travel without worrying about the COVID so much. I mean, you're a nurse, you know, real quick, how are you dealing with this COVID as a nurse?
Honestly, it's been so crazy you know, Joy. When it first started, I was really, it felt like I was dressed up for landing of the moon, you know, and I'm an infusion nurse, so I have to be able to a little bit flexible to start an IV. And it was such a scary time, really. But, you know, thank God most of my patients are vaccinated. I am vaccinated. And I had worked so hard, Joy, that I almost died this year. I got sick. I was working 14 hours. Yeah, I almost really died just from sheer exhaustion of just trying to. Patients were so happy that they could get a hospital care at home. And, you know, it was like really, but I exhausted my body and I end up blowing up my gallbladder and then going to surgery while I'm very weak. And I've lost literally 20 pounds. And I'm a thin person. I don't weigh. I'm less than 100 pounds.
Yeah,
so
she's
I was really dying. I am the smallest person you will ever meet, but I am really, so I tell people, please, all of you, we need to, you know, get our vaccination. I often tell Joy people, if somebody ever tells you, like somebody, you have an AIDS, and somebody tells you, don't take the AIDS medication or HIV medication, would you listen? No, you would go and get your money, you know, whatever you need to cure and get your facts straight. You know, Nelson Mandela said, what did he say? Education is a weapon, which is against something he said. I'm not quoting him right, but it's an essential. It's against weapon against a lot of things. So it is if you get education and you get your facts straight, you are. Honestly, your life starts right. And to me, I feel still, because a lot of people hadn't had their vaccination now, haven't get it. It's like, really, we are still in danger. You know, we are risking our life, and it's exhausting. And so I'll tell people, please do get, you know, I vaccinate. My whole family is vaccinated, including my 14-year-old daughter. So obviously, if I didn't believe, I wouldn't give it to my family. I don't know how the people are in Philadelphia, but I said, you know, African-Americans are dying. We Africans are dying in such a great, big proportions, and we lost so many of our wisdoms. You know, whenever you lose an elderly, you lose, the library is burned. It's fact. So as losing
that's in your story.
Yeah. Their stories are going to die with them, and you don't want to take that risk. And, yeah, some people can take that risk, but African-American community or African community, we cannot
we
take
can't
that
afford
risk.
That.
This
no, you cannot,
we cannot
afford that.
That, yeah. And the last thing the last thing I really want to say, Joy, is for me it is an honor if this book really ends up in schools. You know, as far as I want this student, either Howard University, all of this, you know, Philadelphia is a big African-American community, you know. I want you guys.
Yeah,
that
would be great.
Book to get.
It would be wonderful
because
the curriculum that you could put around this, you could even make a smaller story for younger kids. Like, I could see a picture book.
We are working on
with,
it, yeah. Younger
readers.
Yeah.
See? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure, you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see that. I see that. So, well, thank you so much, Shugri. Thank you very much for coming on today.
It
was a pleasure,
amazing.
Pleasure speaking with you.
I don't know how you hear. I don't know how you hear about Bichoy, but I am so glad you become part of my village. And thank you for spreading my book. Really, it means a lot to me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You have a great rest of your weekend, and bless you, your family, and everybody, your whole clan. Let me say that. Let's say that.
The whole clan, the whole Somali clan. Yes, yes, indeed.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Joy. Have a
thank you.
Saturday. Okay.
You
bye.
Too. Talk to you later. Be safe. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Just got off the phone with author and nurse Shugri Saeed Sal. We're talking about her book, The Last Nomad. I'm going to be giving away some copies, so you want to follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. I'm going to give away a copy, so remember, you got to follow. You can check the show out on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, as well as here at Blog Talk Radio. You guys have a great weekend. Be safe. Please get vaccinated. Please get vaccinated. Whatever vaccine you think you can get to, it will definitely save you, your family, and the larger community. And this is a disease that is not just in America. It is all over the globe. People are fighting all over the globe. There is no fakeness about it. It's all over the globe. And we need to take care of yourself first, then your community, your family. It will help the larger globe. Again, I thank you for listening to the show. You guys have a wonderful weekend.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.